This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Greetings, loved ones. This is episode number 93 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Katie, before we get started, I just wanted to congratulate you on the newest addition to your family.
Oh, thank you. We don't sleep, but it's fine.
What is his name?
His name is Wallace. We call him Wally. Oh, and okay. He's 7 weeks old, and he is a monster. And yeah, he's a pretty cute monster, but he's a monster.
I'm just picturing Wally, like the little robot from the Pixar movies now. I'm like, oh, Wally.
Yeah, Wally. He's kind of like that.
It's funny because you've been posting all these updates, and if I didn't know you, like if I was just looking at your social media feed, you know, blindly, I would assume that you were talking about a new baby.
Oh, yeah. These are my fur babies. A lot of people really hate that term and think it takes away from motherhood and stuff, but this is how I mother, because I don't think I'll ever have kids, so I pour my love into the ones that can't talk back to me.
Now, are they the same breed, Katie?
Yes, they are.
Now what is the breed again?
They are miniature schnauzers.
Okay, I thought schnauzers, because all I kept thinking when you released the name was Wallace and Watson Schnauzers at Law or something like that.
Oh, I'll have to make a sign and like hang it in our office or something.
That'd you totally really should.
That's awesome.
I mean, you can put them to work for you, Katie. I would imagine vet school isn't cheap. So if you find that it's becoming too much, you make them dogs earn their keep. You know, you make them pay rent, you make them pay for food, and you get some help.
Yeah. I mean, we can always take to like begging on the street corners, doing some tricks, maybe get a couple quarters here and there. We'll make it work.
Well, speaking of your career and speaking of school, I know you also tweeted about a new opportunity that you got to do an externship.
Yes, I was accepted to do a week-long radiology externship down in LA over the summer, so that'll be very exciting. And if it goes well, there's the possibility of doing an internship after I graduate and, you know, on from there. So hopefully it'll be fun. You know, sometimes they're not good experiences and sometimes they are. So we will see. That's why I only signed up for a week. But yeah, I'm really excited for it.
Well, that's fantastic. It sounds like everything has been coming up, Katie, lately.
Yeah. Besides the sleep. Yes.
You're like, I would trade it all for a good night's sleep.
Just a little bit. I'm almost there.
Well, speaking of somebody else who doesn't sleep, we have a woman of excellence this week, and we've talked about her before. Christine Sprankle recently posted a video to YouTube and I believe launched a Patreon. I don't know if the Patreon existed before, but it's here now. She's been going through some very difficult things in her personal life, and she basically indicated that she's simply not able to afford to really do cosplay anymore, you know, the cosplay that we all know and love from her. And so she was asking fans that if they enjoy what she does and if they enjoy having her in the community, you know, if they could toss her a buck or two, you know, she would really, really appreciate that. And it seems like the community really showed out for her. She has 313 patrons right now. She has reached the part-time cosplay and travel level, meaning that she can, you know, basically afford to do this and have a little bit left over to survive. And I'm always a huge supporter of people who want to kind of monetize what they do. You know, we've talked before about how a lot of work goes into the things we do, and there's a lot of unseen costs, you know, when you're a writer and you're a podcaster and things like that. So I see nothing wrong with what Christine is doing, and she certainly has done a lot for the community. She's probably the biggest force in cosplay that Magic has right now, male or female or otherwise. She's also been a big help for up-and-coming cosplayers. Like, she's very good at taking them under her wing and mentoring them. You know, you don't see her competing with them or anything like that, and she's just a huge force for good. So if you do want to help her out and you do want to contribute, you can visit patreon.com/C, the letter C, Sprankle Run, and let her know that you're thinking about her, because I just signed up today, so I hope it helps.
Mm-hmm.
So last Thursday, before we went to SCG Indie, which we'll talk about, we got the opportunity to participate in a streamer showdown. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of a plot twist. It was supposed to be a Mirage Tempest Standard Gauntlet. That's a mouthful. And then at the last minute, there were some cards that weren't quite working, and it turned into a triple cons draft. And Hallie and Katie, you know, Katie, you were nice enough to pilot, and Hallie, you really helped out with the deck building. So how do you feel that it went?
I thought it was super fun. I haven't drafted cons in a while, but when it was the main set to draft, I drafted it several times a week, every week, and I felt like I knew the format really well. Unfortunately, I was a little bit rusty since I haven't drafted in a while, but it's still a really fun set. It's a really deep set, and I love the way that morphs play in Limited, so I was really grateful to have the opportunity to draft it again.
Yeah, we drafted a pretty cool Mardu deck. We pack one, picked one, Butcher of the Horde, and then I think the next pick was Crackling Doom, so...
Yep.
We just kind of ran with it. And it's so funny because a lot of people who want to get better at draft really should just draft with other people, where you can like communicate with them. So maybe not in person, but on Modo with somebody else or something, because it always is surprising to me when we all get together and do a draft. Like Hallie and I have very different drafting styles. And so sometimes we'll kind of go her way and sometimes we'll go my way. But whenever we go her way, it's always interesting to see how something would play out that maybe I wouldn't have picked earlier, or, you know, a deck archetype that I like wasn't a huge fan of for some reason. And then we draft it and it ends up working. And it's always just kind of a good experience to get out of your own headspace and into somebody else's and actually see it through into the game. So we had a really good time. I think we only went 1-2, but we had some pretty bad Modo luck in one of our rounds at least. And then the other one I think was some pretty close games. So I thought the deck was pretty solid. I would have been happy with 2-1, but it was a lot of fun. We drafted with a good group. There was a Lantris and MTA cast and our friend Scalding Hot Soup, who I think we still don't really know who that is, but we play against them really frequently. So it was a good time overall.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, I think Katie, you piloted very well. And yeah, I definitely agree with, you know, I just love watching, you know, you, Katie and Hallie work together. I think you two make a really great team. And, you know, I'm not the strongest drafter, so I just enjoy watching you two and hearing your reasoning for why you choose the cards that you do, because, you know, I usually wouldn't make those choices, but again, I'm not a good drafter. And so it's nice to hear why you chose what you did. And then I can kind of learn from that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris, what did you think about our deck, and what did you think about the Streamer Showdown?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I always enjoy it when we do the Streamer Showdown, and I like when we're able to play against people that we haven't played before, or we get to play against people that we seem to play against quite often. I thought our deck was sweet. It was unfortunate that there were just, like, some archetypes that we came up against that were just, like, super crazy powerful, but I think that we made good card choices, and I think that we put together a really solid deck.
Yeah, Scalding Hot Soup is a young man named Ian Suzuki. I've stumbled upon his stream before, and he seems like he's really good. He seems like he specializes in Limited. He plays some other card games as well, has a pretty huge following, and he drafted a really sweet, almost like a four-color morph deck, and had a lot of cards that, in a vacuum, you might kind of scoff at. Like, we were like, Trail of Mystery, girl. Like, you know, and then, like, we started to see that his deck was made up of so many morph cards, and it was like, oh, that makes sense. And I think, Hallie, you were the one that explained that that is a legitimate archetype in the format, and I'd never seen it before.
Yeah, the four-color morph deck, usually excluding white, so, like, the blue, black, red, green morph deck was a legitimate thing, just because... I'm not sure how it started. I know when I drafted the set, white was one of the stronger colors, and so Abzan and Mardu would just get gobbled up really quickly, and so Temur and Sultai were usually where I know I would end up, usually, when I drafted that. And a lot of the good morphs are in those colors. Abomination of Ghidul is a really good common morph. Snowhorn Rider was a really good common morph. Woolly Loxodon was a very good common morph, which blew us out in one of those games. Yeah, there were just so many great cards at common in those colors. And if you have Trail of Mystery or even just like a Secret Plans to just make all your morphs bigger than your opponent's morphs, it's a very strong archetype and one that I always like to draft when I drafted that set.
It kind of turned into like a mini game of like trying to guess what the morph was going to turn into, where it's like you're looking at the land he has available and you're like, okay, I see a blue, a green. Okay, no red. So it can't be this morph. And then, you know, they'd reveal it and we were either right or we were wrong. And I thought that was a neat little additional game to play in addition to the game of Magic itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of funny because like, so I was kind of gearing up for the standard, you know, I hadn't looked into anything. And then they said triple cons and I was like, what cards are in cons? Because you always just like forget all of the cards that weren't played in standard. And so it's, I think it's always fun to do like a flashback draft just because, you know, all those commons and uncommons that R&D went into, you know, making, and they just kind of go by the wayside as time goes on. And then you see them again in a draft and you're like, oh yeah, I remember this card. This card really messed me up that one time. Or like, I played a lot of this card in limited. So it was just kind of fun to get like a flashback from semi-recent memory where it wasn't too long ago, but just long enough where we'd kind of forgotten what was going on. So it was a good time.
Yeah, I have a great appreciation for cons. You know, the cons was one of the few sets that I really feel like I was able to draft, you know, being sort of a novice drafter myself. And I think it might have been limited resources that came up with this strategy, but I used to do the thing where like for the first pack, you would just take all the lands. And then when the second and third packs would be opened up, you would then sort of fill in the gaps with the colors that you had. And I did that several times. And I felt like doing that, I was able to consistently build, you know, pretty reasonable decks. And that made it really enjoyable for me. Because, you know, that gave me sort of like a framework to build off of. And so even if we, you know, even if I was playing by myself, I still felt like I could have handled myself in a cons draft. And, you know, I would probably stream that. You know, that's one of the only formats I would really stream a draft of. Anything else I think would be a train wreck. So the next day, Chris and I got up really early and we headed over to Indianapolis for the Star City Games Open. And Chris, why don't you tell us what you thought of the trip?
I had a really nice time. I always like going to Indianapolis. And we stayed in a really awesome place that was really off the beaten path, so we weren't disturbed by traffic or any craziness, and we could just kind of relax, veg out before the tournament, and watch some Forensic Files and just have a good time. So the place we stayed at was built by an architect, and he lived in it since like the early 70s, sold it at some point to the new owner, but all the majority of the architecture was all original. So it was just a very contemporary looking place, and it kind of has like three levels to it, and you would go up and down from them using like a spiral staircase. So it was very, very interesting, and lots of windows, and just beautiful. If I could live there, I totally would. So the space was super nice. And then the tournament itself, I ended up 5-4 overall. I kind of had a bad start to the tournament. I lost my first two versus Bant Eldrazi and Naya Burn, and I always hate losing to Burn. So I was a little tilted after the second round, and I was like, okay, I have to get my head back on straight and stop freaking out like this. So then the third round, I played against a gentleman that was on a Budget Curses deck, but I didn't see much of the deck. I saw Swamps and Mountains, and he bumpin' the knighted me a few times, but I don't really know what else there was to it. And so I very politely asked him because I just wanted to see like what more there was going on, but it seemed like he was very disappointed over his loss, so he wasn't really into sharing all the details, which I really would have liked to know because there were inquiring minds on Twitter that wanted to know. So I ended up at 1-2 at that point. The fourth round, for whatever reason, my opponent no-showed, and at that point we were still live, possibly, so I don't know why, but they didn't show up, so I just kind of trolled around, looked at the vendor booths, picked up some cheap cards that I needed, and enjoyed my free win. The next round, round five, I had to play Burn again and lost out of three to them. I was very, very sad that at that point I was out of any contention for day two, but I sucked it up. And the subsequent round, round six, I played versus Living End, but with Siege Rhino. And I was very confused.
Why?
I don't know.
That's spicy.
they just got a sea rhino in there, and then they bring the sea rhino back with all the peeps, and yeah, I don't know. So we played two games, and then during game three, I had mentioned, yeah, at this point, you know, I'm just trying to get Planeswalker points and other stuff, and dude just scooped me and was like, here. He's like, I got some stuff I have to take care of. He's like, I'll give you the win. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was very kind of him. And he did even check on me the next day. How are you doing? How's your tournament going? We're going to be playing some Commander over here. So if you want to play, let us know. So really nice person. Then the next round was seven. I had to play versus one of Aaron's Dredge Acolytes. And I promptly had to 2-0 them because it was just the right thing to do. So it was 4-3.
Ma'am.
Very nice guy that I played against. So he's been playing since like 94 or something. We had a great conversation. And he just was an all around nice guy. Round eight, Blue Eye Demaria. I just can't. And nope. I've played the deck, but it just won't die. And I get it. I get it. That's what it's supposed to do. But it's still so frustrating. You're like, I'm so sick of your Sun Titan. And at one point, they kept on getting back Ghost Quarter and just taking me off all the green mana I had. So I was like, well, I won't be doing anything for the rest of the game. So if you could just kill me, that would be great. So they ended up just smoking me. And then the very last round, round nine, I had to play against my dear friend Bob, who I could have played just by walking down the streets. So he was on Affinity, and I 2-0'd him and ended up 5-4. I felt bad because I thought we were just going to draw, and then he was like, no, just, you know, it was 2-0, and I'm like, okay, sounds fine. So that was how I ended the tournament. Then the next day, I figured I'd come back for the Classic for Modern. I didn't get back in time, so I did a challenge. My challenge was, I don't want to say it was fun. I had a good time. But I feel like even though I didn't do super well, I made people work for it. And I was playing Blutron, and I was just playing so tight. I was just like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm playing so well right now. This is so awesome. And Aaron and I had conversation on the way down about how if you're trying to put a chalice on five versus ad nauseum, you're doing it wrong, which I've done in the past. And then I did it that day, and it was wonderful. And he couldn't do anything. I'm just like, I know what you're doing. I know all your tricks. It's like, I've been taught well. So, like, I'm trying to, like, just navigate the shit out of everything. And we ended up going, it was 1-1 draw at the end of it. If I had played something a little differently, I probably could have killed him and gotten the win. But I chose to play a Platinum Angel instead of a Wormcoil Engine, not really looking at damage and stuff, just trying to play around anything else he could possibly do to get out of his situation. And I got to Jester's Cap him, and that felt really good. So I'm like, I'll take your Lightning Storm, I'll take an Adnaz and a Phyrexian Unlife. It was the best thing ever. So that was a lot of fun. He was a really nice guy. That was the second round. The first round, I actually played against someone that was a fan of the show. And after we played, he dropped the token in front of me and was like, I'm a fan of you and the show and all the stuff. I'm like, oh my God. And I wasn't sure how to process all my feelings right at that time because I had just lost to Death Shadow. And I was like, oh man, that really sucked. And then it was like, here, now I'm giving you all this love. And I was like, there's all these feelings right now. But that was really nice. And that was a great experience. And then the third round, I played versus Bant Eldrazi. That was, he beat me in turns, but I made him work for it. And people were just like watching us play. They're like, that was such a stressful match to watch. And I was like, yes, everyone was interested. We kept them entertained. So I was very pleased. And then my fourth round opponent, he was mixing Burn with Affinity. And I was like, okay. So it's like, I wasn't really sure what to do. And he's like, yeah, no one will ever expect it.
Oh my God. That's a reason, I guess.
And I was like, okay. But I was just like, but the first game, he kept no lands. So I wasn't really sure what he had in hand until like right before I killed him, because I think he got like a land eventually. And then the second and third games, he just rolled me. So I was like, all right, you got it. You got signal pass. You got all this other stuff. You got it, boo. So that was the end of the actual tournament for me. But I got to meet a lot of nice people, got to hang out with some of my local friends that also came down, got to enjoy some wonderful roast that was made for us by our housemates, which was really nice. And we played Commander, and that was always fun. And I will admit, it is part of the reason I upgraded my Commander deck today with cards I had in the house, which was really awesome because I didn't have to actually pay any money for it, which was doubly cool. So now I'm ready to play Commander. So that kind of reignited the fire within me to do that. So all in all, 10 out of 10, would travel to Indy again.
Yeah, Burn was everywhere this weekend. I played Burn 3 times the first day, beat it twice, and then lost to it the last round of the day, which felt terrible. Our house was incredibly dope, as Chris said. We found this really sweet house on Airbnb, and the guy ended up being a famous NASCAR driver. I'm not going to name him or anything, but when we got to the house, he came out to meet us. The owner came out to meet us, and he was really young and really kind of fit. And he had this beautiful accent, and I asked him where he was from, and he said, Columbia. And I was like, that's wonderful. And so he's giving us a tour of the house, and he keeps mentioning his office. My office, my office, my office. And they lived in the other half of the house. So the cabin was divided in two, and our place could have easily been just one house, but it was part of an entire house. And so him and his family lived in the other half. And ultimately, I asked him, I said, if you don't mind me asking, what do you do for a living? And I'm thinking he's in tech or startup or something like that, because we had this really neat computerized lock on the front door that you used an app to unlock. I'd never seen that before. And he just goes, I'm an athlete. And I was like, okay. So I started looking around the house, and I noticed that there's pictures of like race cars everywhere. Like there's portraits and paintings. And then I see a picture of him hugging somebody on a racetrack. And I'm like, all right, I got to know who this is. And so I Google his first name, because he introduced himself to us, Columbia and Racing. And all of a sudden his name comes up. And come to find out, he's got like 30,000 followers on Twitter, millionaire at 25, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, oh my God, we're staying at like some famous dude's house. And so, and because he doesn't need the money, he donates all of the income from the Airbnb to a horse refuge.
That's cool.
So like on the ad for the Airbnb, there's a huge message in caps that says, you know, all of the money goes to this charity, and please donate to them if you can. So it was really, really awesome. The house was really, really great. We ate very well. I took ad nauseum because I felt like it was a good pick for the weekend. And it ended up winning the whole thing, which was really neat to see. Even though I didn't like that young man's list, it was still really, really cool. The first round of the day, I got an off-camera feature match against a young man who thought I was on dredge. And so he kept his opening hand because of that reason. And then after I played a turn one Sea Revisions, he's like, you're not on dredge. And I was like, nope. And he goes, I only kept this hand because you were on dredge. And I was like, sorry about it. So he ended up being on Lantern Control. And as most of you know, that is one of the 3 decks in my life that I will usually just snap concede to. But I was in the feature match area, and even though I wasn't on camera, I know that sometimes like you can see behind people. And like, I didn't want to like, you know, the feature match to start and I just immediately get up and leave because that looks funny. And I also didn't want them to like cut to me. Like, let's say the feature match ended early and they were like, oh, on the backup table, we have Aaron Campbell. And the camera goes over and it's an empty seat in cricket. So I was like, all right, I'm going to play this thing out. And through some miracle of God, I beat him 2-0.
Cool.
I've never beat Lantern Control before. And so that felt fantastic. And he was a really sweet guy. And then I ended up going 1-2 and was feeling really down. I was just like, I was sort of planning what I was going to do with the rest of my day. I was like, I'm just going to drop. I'm going to find other things to do. And then I proceeded to win the next 4. So then I was 5-2. So I'm getting this really severe case of whiplash. It gets 1-2, 5-2. And then I'm like, okay, I'm doing like some Britney choreo in the bathroom. I'm feeling really, really good. I think I can close out the day. And then I proceed to lose the last 2 decks that I don't really enjoy. So I lost to Grixis Delver, who surgicled me twice. surgicled my Simian Spirit Guide, which is rude. And so by the time I could get enough mana to go off, he had a dispel. And I was like, you can just show me the counterspell. Don't make me do this. And so he shows me the dispel. And then I lost to a Burn player, and I'd beaten Burn twice before. So I was feeling really, really good. But my first hand against him was really slow. It was a fine hand against anybody else, but against Burn, it was just too slow. And then in game 2, double Eidolon was what really killed me. And so it felt really disappointing to, you know, start off slow, come back strong, and then go out in that kind of fashion, especially to decks that I don't particularly care for. So I was a little stabby after that. But 5-4 was fine. It was nice to have a matching record with Chris. Everybody I played was cool for the most part. The event was really well run, very huge event. And then I came back the following day for a legacy challenge, and there were three other ladies in our challenge, and we were all playing graveyard decks. Which I thought was really, really awesome. So I faced a young lady in round one named Catherine. Catherine was playing Black Red Reanimator, which I had played before. And we both had Grizzlebrands by turn two. Like, it was just hilarious. And our Grizzlebrands matched. And so we were having a really fun time talking about how much we love doing broken things. And it turned into a really fun game until I made a colossal punt and pretty much just gave Catherine the game. So we went to game three, and I was feeling really, really good. And a lot of times when I'm dredging, I will take the card that I'm dredging and put it on the left, dredge with my right hand, and then put the dredgers back in my hand just so that they can see where I'm getting my dredges from. And I don't know. So in game two, so we go to game three, and I accidentally knock over my deck box as I'm dredging because my graveyard gets everywhere. And a couple of cards fall off the top of my deck box. And Catherine goes, "Oh, is that your sideboard?" And I was like, "No." And so I pick up the cards and I see like two Grave Trolls, a Breakthrough, a Stinkweed Imp. And I'm like, "Oh, those must be the dredgers from game two that I never put back in my hand, probably didn't put back in my library. And I think I might have started this game with less than 60 cards. So I'm just going to sign the slip and you know, avoid any sort of awkward judge calls. I completely own this. You're a sweet girl. Go kill them." And so I did not put my dredgers away like I should have. I was playing too damn fast and I got sloppy. And so I basically punted the game. So that was fine. Go to game two, meet a really nice bug player named Sam. I ended up beating him 2-0. There was a young lady next to me named Sarah who was also on Reanimator. So that was really, really cool. Game three, I ended up playing against this really, quiet elves player. We end up going to game three, I believe. And he keeps a hand with two surgicals and no lands. And gets there, because that's what happens. And so he ends up taking me out. I was really sore about that, and then I just dropped. And then Chris and I got chicken and waffles, which were delicious. If you're ever in Indy, go to Maxine's Chicken and Waffles. Don't let the fact that it's inside of a gas station deter you, because it's fucking dope. Just throwing that out there. I know when Chris first recommended it, we were pulling up to a gas station, and I'm like, "You took me to a restaurant next to a gas station?" And Chris is like, "Give it a chance." And so we go in, and it was delightful. So chicken and waffles were good. Our friends brought a crock pot and made a roast for us, so we ate very well. We slept very well. I had a really good time for the most part. You know, I definitely was distracted by some things, you know, happening in my personal life. So I admit that I didn't have as much fun as I would have liked to have had. But for the most part, it was nice. And I don't have any events coming up until Vegas, with the exception of maybe States next week. So, you know, it was nice to sort of play Modern and play the deck that I love. And, you know, I'm looking forward to some rest after that. So speaking of Modern, a young man named Andrew Jessup wrote an article for Gathering Magic called "Don't Play Bad Decks in Modern." I know we've touched on a couple decks today that could be described as sort of interesting or spicy. And Andrew goes so far as to even call out certain decks and just say that this is clearly a bad deck. Why is this a thing? I know that our friend Daniela Diaz, Holy Diva on Twitter, has been going off on some tangents recently that says that Modern has just become a little too cute, that, you know, you can play everything or pretty much anything you want to, but should you necessarily? And Andrew, you know, goes on to highlight Eldrazi Tron specifically. And it's just like, you know, why are you playing Walking Ballista in this format? And why are you doing this? And, you know, are there better lists you could be playing? And, you know, what did you all think about this? Like, do you think that there is such a thing as, you know, is this happening the way that Andrew says it is? You know, do you think that this is a problem? What do you all think?
I don't think it's necessarily a problem. I definitely think, you know, the format is very diverse. And when you have a format that's as diverse as Modern is, where there are so many, there are tens of viable decks, obviously some are going to be better positioned than others. As we've been seeing, Death Shadow has been incredibly well positioned, and it's become, you know, as Andrew says, like, better than Infect, basically, or more well positioned than Infect right now. And, you know, there are quite a few decks that are very good. As he said, you know, Dredge is still good, even though Grave Troll was banned. Lantern Control is very good now. Obzon is very good now, and possibly the best midrange deck. But I think that while he has a point in saying that these are, like, the best versions of those, you know, macro archetypes, you know, control, midrange, aggro, etc., I do think that Modern is still a format where knowing your deck actually matters a lot. That sometimes, you know, if you've been playing Merfolk for 3 years, you can still just go to a tournament with Merfolk and do incredibly well against people who are just picking up the flavor of the week deck. I think that the reason why the format is so diverse is because you can just do that, because there are so many different decks that you'll come across, and knowing your deck is really what's going to benefit you.
Yeah, I felt like this was a super polarizing article. Like, you're either going to be like, yeah, I'm really getting what he's saying, or you're going to be like, no, I disagree with everything. And I feel like he has a point for the decks that he says are the good decks in Modern, like Death's Shadow and Dredge, and how they're, you know, doing well and they're well positioned against a large majority of the field. But I feel like you can't disregard the fact that the meta changes every single week. And the meta is going to change whether you're at a GP or a Star City or in your local game store at a PPTQ. And so when you have something like Death's Shadow, and maybe, you know, Deck X beats Death's Shadow and that starts to become popular at your store, then you have to, you know, maybe switch your deck choice up and become familiar with a new deck that beats Deck X. And I think that you can't just say a deck is bad because it hasn't put up results in the last few weeks. Or maybe it hasn't put up results in a long while, but it's kind of like stuff from the 70s. Like, it's going to come back. It always comes back. Yeah. And so decks like Affinity, which we haven't really seen a super strong showing for in the last, you know, 6 months of Modern or this Modern season, you know, I feel like they're going to come back around. Like, people start to get lax with their sideboards. They start to take out, you know, artifact hate, and then Affinity crops up and steals a show. I think that's just kind of how Modern is. And I personally like the format that way. It keeps it from becoming stale. And so I think when you break down Modern into the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you're kind of telling people to only play the good, I think that, you know, the bad and the ugly are going to come back and bite you in the butt somehow, because that's what the format is made to do. It's a revolving door of decks. So I think you can't really put labels on decks currently, because it's not always going to be that way. Like, next week it might be completely different.
I agree. I read this article, and to me, it just felt like a love letter as to why you should play Death's Shadow. And I was like, I don't want to play Death's Shadow. And one of the things that he says in the article is that the reasons that you would say that you wouldn't play Death's Shadow probably aren't good enough. It's like, I don't have just four Tarmogoyfs just lying around. Mm-hmm. I may be able to find some foil Windswept Heath that I'm like, oh, cool, I haven't seen you in a while. But not Tarmogoyfs. I mean, the price of the deck can be expensive. And so that can definitely be a factor for some people if maybe they don't want to invest into that deck, especially something that could be just the flavor of the week. For me, Modern is about repetition, knowing your deck well, so I completely co-sign and agree with everything that Katie and Halliable said, and ultimately, play what you like to play. Need I remind people that Scred Red won a GP? Like, that was a thing. That happened.
I'd like to forget that, please.
It happened. Lantern Control won a GP. I personally don't like the deck. I've been told by many people that think I would enjoy playing it, but it's just there's too many things, and I don't want to be like one of the most hated people in the room because I'm playing a deck that A, I might not know how to play well, and B, a deck that just puts everyone like on edge. So no thank you. I don't disagree with the decks that he said were good decks, because they are good decks. With maybe the exception of Lantern. The bad decks, it was just weird because at the end he says that Ad Nauseam, Goryeo's Vengeance, and Amulet Titan, that they're too powerful to be dismissed as completely unplayable, but he wouldn't consider them to be necessarily good. All three of those decks terrify the shit out of me in different ways. And you need to be definitely on point to pilot against them. The ugly decks, I don't see it for Eldrazi Tron either. Burn, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing to be considered. I mean, we may not have to deal with Infect anymore, but Burn is still just a prevalent deck that is going to be like, can I burn you like a billion times to the face and get in with some creatures? cool, you're just dead. That is just what happens. And John, I can see where he is saying perhaps you should play Death Shadow over Jund right now, that there's no reason to be playing Jund because Death Shadow is just the better pick. If you have the majority of those cards, you're pretty much ready to rock anyway. So you could play either one of them if you wanted to. And Titan Shift and Tron, I think they're both solid decks. I agree they're on that they are unfair decks. But I don't think that they do not have a place in Modern. Anything has a place. I played against curses, for God's sakes. So, you know, it's like play what you want. You never know what's going to win the next tournament. So far we've had Ad Nauseam, Lantern Control. What was the other one that won recently that I can't remember?
Death Shadow.
Death Shadow. Yeah.
So there you go. Three different decks, and what? So we'll see what happens.
So I, you know, I'll kind of be the bad guy here. I actually related to a lot of Andrew's article, actually. You know, I do want to comment on some of the decks that were mentioned. You know, I do think Burn was a valid choice, particularly after the bans, because any time that a format is sort of in chaos, and we've talked about this before with regards to rotation happening, you know, aggro decks and specifically Burn decks are a really good choice to sort of prey on people who really aren't sure what to do, you know, especially if you're somebody who had your deck fall victim to a ban, like, say, Dredge or Infect, you know, you weren't sure what to play, and so you might have played something you weren't used to, you might have hastily had to find another deck, and sort of the format is trying to find itself, you know, after those two decks fall out of favor, and so Burn is a really good choice in times of chaos, and so I can understand, you know, why Burn is a thing right now. Also with Jund, you know, Jund is a very safe choice, you know, it's a very 50-50 kind of deck, you know, it doesn't really have any great matchups, but it also doesn't have any bad matchups, and so I think Jund is also a fine choice for a tournament. I don't understand Eldrazi Tron at all. I feel like both of those decks are still completely viable. I like to call that deck Swedish Fish Oreos because you're just jamming two completely random flavors together and trying to make it a thing. You know, I don't understand how you can play a full set of Urza lands and not play four Karn Liberated. Like, you're showing up with two Karns. I just don't understand. Like, I can't wrap my head around that logically. You know, I think the other thing that I really took away from Andrew's post is that this is in regards to people who are trying to do well at tournaments. And I think that was something that really wasn't covered here. You know, not everybody goes to a tournament to day two. Not everybody goes to get pro points and things like that. You know, people are going to events more to have fun. Some people go because it's simply in their neighborhood. You know, and I think if you're the kind of person who isn't going for that reason, then I think you really can play anything you want and have your expectations be in line with that. I took Andrew's article more to mean that if you're trying to win, if you're trying to crush, if you're trying to get on the train, you need to be stepping your cookie up, and you need to be playing the best version possible. A lot of times I see people who say that they want that, and then they show up with really cute builds, or they really show up with unoptimized lists. So I know in the case of Ad Nauseam, I'm going to make Glittering Wish Ad Nauseam a thing, and it's like, girl, like, if you want to be Ad Nauseam, be the best fucking Ad Nauseam deck you can be Spoils of the Vault, which has the greatest percentage of hitting your combo pieces, you know, get the most fine-tuned list you can, you know, don't play, you know, some bullshit, you know, if your goal is to make it to the top, and that's sort of the tone that I took from his article, is that if your goal is to be at the top, you need to be playing a top deck, whether it be Death Shadow, whether it be Dredge, whether it be Lantern Control, you know, don't bring, you know, just sort of have your expectations be in line with that, and have your deck sort of, you know, have your deck clearly indicate like what your intentions are. And that's sort of what I took away from this. And so I think he had several good points. I think he could have added the caveat, you know, or just sort of leaned on the message more that this is for people who are trying to do well. And that if you are going to have a good time, or if that's not your goal, then play whatever the hell you want. You know, Modern's great right now, but, I can agree that there are definitely some things and some cards where I'm just like, why are you doing this? So there was also some announcements that came out today. Modern Masters 2017 spoilers are coming out fast and furious. The first article that I read this morning was so great. It was by it was by Adam Prozac, and it basically just says, "Fine, here you go." Damnation is finally being reprinted.
Woo!
That is a much loved card that people have consistently been asking for throughout the years, and Wizards has finally been like, all right, girl, here you go. And so we have a beautiful new Damnation to look forward to. They've also announced that they're going to be reprinting the Enemy Fetchlands, which is also something that people have been asking for years. Misty Rainforest, Scalding Tarn, Marsh Flats, Arid Mesa, Inverting Catacombs. We got hit with so many things today, and we also got hit with some things last week. Is there anything in particular that y'all are looking forward to?
I want to give the professor a shout out for a really awesome preview video, as always. He does really great work on his preview videos, and this one that he did with Christine Sprankle for Goblin Guide was really sweet, and I was really glad to hear at the end of the video that because of the Patreon money he's been receiving, he's been able to upgrade his equipment and some of his software for recording his videos. And I just wanted to, you know, give him a shout out for that and congratulate him, because that's really awesome to hear.
I want the fetches and I want them now. So that is definitely a thing. I'm very interested to see how drafting this will go. I see that they're indicating that they wanted to have certain archetypes in here. I'm very interested in this blue-white blink business. I want to know what they're going to utilize in that. Like, that's definitely got the wheels turning in my brain. So I'm very interested seeing what happens. Guildgate's got some love again. Hey, because I can't hate on that. But no mazes and we just can't.
Not yet. Not yet.
Oh, that's right, because it was a mythic rare. That's right.
The possibility's still there.
If it is, I will be very happy, because I love the shit out of that card. The only thing I'm sad about with the Damnation reprint is I was hoping to unload the one I had that I'll never use, and I'm like, damn it. I hope it doesn't change the price too drastically.
Damnation.
Everyone is just, like, memeing that out right now. It's pretty great. I just want to see what else they release. Unfortunately, 24 spoilers is not enough for me to make a full decision. I would maybe be persuaded to buy a box, but I want to see what else is in it first.
Yeah, I'm always super stoked for Modern Masters, because I feel like they are my favorite draft sets out of all the sets that come out in a year. It's hands down always the Modern Masters that I have the most fun drafting. So I'm super excited to see where this is going to go. We don't have a ton going on yet, but I like what I'm seeing so far, so I am super excited to see what the spoilers have in store for us next.
Somebody tweeted something earlier that the new art on Goblin Guide indicates that the Goblin Guide in Modern Masters 2017 is a lady goblin.
Oh, really?
Judging by the growth, like the cranial, the skull covering. They had posted a paragraph from one of the art books or the lore books. It might have been the Zendikar version. And they were saying that the female goblins tend to have these skull growths or these big growths on their heads. And so it sounds like that's a lady goblin guy.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And then somebody made a really sweet gesture about that they hope the male goblin guy and the female goblin guy find their way together.
Aww.
I know, right? I'm really excited about this set too. You know, Adam Prozak mentioned, Katie, you mentioned drafting, and he was talking about how they each kind of, there's going to be some strategies that are inherent to the set. You know, white, blue, blink, which is up Hallie's alley, certainly Resto Angel. Hallie's like, I am there. She's like, I don't know what I'm blinking, but I'm blinking.
I'm blinking.
She's blinking. Blue, black, instant control, of course. Black, red, unearth, which I'm completely here for. Red, green, go wide, and green, white, populate are some of the strategies inherent to the set. I just like that they're, you know, kind of addressing the reprint thing. You know, that's something that people have been really vocal about, specifically the fetch lands. I know with Modern being as diverse as it is, you know, people would really love to play maybe Baral Storm, or people would love to have some Misty Rainforest, and those two have been sort of the most expensive fetches for the longest time. And so if it means that people can, you know, afford their mana bases a lot better in any format, and if they can, you know, finally play the decks they want to play, I think that's a really good thing. It does seem like they've been listening to the feedback that people have been giving them about which cards really need reprints, like Goblin Guide specifically. And so I'm really glad that they're addressing that, and that the people can sort of get into the formats they want to play. And I'm really excited. I saw Grizzlebrand. I think that's really cool. I'm not much of a sealed person, but I have enjoyed drafting it with friends whenever they had a box. And so I'm really looking forward to see. There's been a lot of talk about what the the next Mythics might be, whether or not we'll finally get a Liliana of the Veil reprint, another Snapcaster reprint. I think this is just a home run so far.
Yeah, and it comes out a week before my birthday, so I will definitely be buying a couple boxes and drafting it with friends.
Cool. Is that your hint of saying that you want some Modern Masters for your birthday?
Maybe.
All right, we'll start pooling our Patreon money together to buy you a box. We have a listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfromvacant@gmail.com. If you need advice about anything, we are happy to help. This email comes to us from Darcy. This is a bit of a long one. I did try to edit it, but I did end up keeping some things in for context because I wanted to make sure that we covered all of Darcy's bases. So Darcy says, hello, TGFB, longtime listener, first time emailer. I come to you all today with a problem, and it's something that followed me everywhere in my life, but also in the magic community. I am a cis gay man, and while being queer in magic has always come with challenges, that's not my biggest problem. My big problem is that while I know I'm a cis man, essentially nobody else does. I am incredibly androgynous, and I mean regularly catcalled, voice that can sing a soprano role, called miss in the grocery line, androgynous. To most of the outside world, I'm a woman, at least until I correct them. I have a really hard time connecting to people and finding a place in communities, and I think my androgyny plays a part in that. No one likes not being able to recognize another person's gender, and no one likes having their pronouns corrected. It's an uncomfortable way to make a first impression, and combine that with also being morbidly obese and all the stigma that comes along with that, and it makes it tough to find people interested in spending time with me. Despite all this time in the magic community, I still don't have anyone to talk to about the same hobby outside of events. I can't find two-headed giant partners for EDH. No one includes me in plans to go to events. If I'm judging an event, I wouldn't get included in any plans to room with people and wouldn't get included in any social events except for the formal traditional judge dinner. When I stepped down to level one, not a single judge reached out to me. The only judge who ever reached out to me and tried to include me passed away suddenly, and since then I feel forgotten. Supposedly there's a tight-knit community, both of players and of judges in Canada, but I've never felt part of it. I've always wondered why this was. Personality has always been a consideration, but it's hard to sniff that out when people would regularly describe me as kind, considerate, fair, and approachable. I can't help but feel it has something to do with these surface-level things, these stigmas and prejudices that make it hard for others to imagine themselves including me in their lives. Compounding this is the reality that I don't really have anyone to turn to. I don't have a space that's mine. Other cis men, especially straight ones, have difficulty understanding me, and I would hate to take up too much space in women-centric magic spheres because, frankly, I'm not a woman and I don't like being confused as one. I'm not trans, I don't experience gender or body dysphoria, and I'm very comfortable in the skin I was born in, and I'm not transitioning in any way. I don't feel like I'm non-binary because I don't like my androgyny, and I'd probably be more comfortable if people would just be able to tell my gender. I love this game so much, and magic is supposed to be the place where people who have nowhere else to go and belong to can go. I guess I'm just sad and frustrated that it feels like even this promise wasn't meant to apply to people like me. Until episode 100, Darcy.
Letters like this are always really difficult for me to read, because as Darcy says at the end of the letter, magic is supposed to be a place where people can go to escape all the difficulty of their normal day-to-day lives, and where they can get away from the stigmas and the prejudices that plague us and just play a game with other like-minded people and just have fun. And so it always really viscerally bothers me when people say that they can't do that with magic, or that even this community that is supposedly so inclusive, or that is trying so hard to be inclusive, isn't inclusive to them. You know, my heart goes out to Darcy. I'm very sad to hear that, you know, this is the reality that they live with, and that, you know, he can't, you know, experience the community the way I would, or the way that a lot of people that I play with do. And that makes me very sad. But I will say, you know, in this letter, one thing that I sort of latched on to was that he says that he doesn't want to go to the Lady Planeswalker Society because he fears, you know, possibly being misgendered or feeling like he's taking up space in a space that's reserved for women. And so as a member of a Lady Planeswalker Society, I wanted to sort of weigh in on that and debunk some of the misconceptions about the group. I've been a part of the Lady Planeswalker Society for almost 5 years now, and it's definitely a place for people of all genders. We've been trying really hard in the last several years to not quite rebrand it, but pushed the notion that regardless of your gender, you are welcome here. It's not just a space for women. It was originally created as a space for women because women didn't have a space in the game. But we welcome people of all genders, all experience levels, all experiences, all walks of life to, you know, partake in this game. And like I said, forget about the stigmas, forget about the stereotypes, and just have fun. And many of the closest friends that I've made through my Lady Planeswalker Society happen to be men. There are lots of male allies who are part of our community, and there are a lot of men who have come to us saying, I don't feel comfortable playing at my local game store. Can I play with you? Or I don't feel comfortable going to F&M, or I don't feel comfortable going to PTQs. Can I play here? And we've welcomed them, and they've become a part of our community. They've been as much a part of our community as the women who are, you know, part of the group. And so I would say to Darcy that, you know, if you do have a Lady Planeswalker Society, you know, a Planeswalkers for Diversity group, since, you know, you allude to being from Canada, these are things that you should look into, because even if you feel like you don't fit, you know, what you think the group is, you may be surprised and you may end up finding your people there, the people who really build you up and make you enjoy playing Magic again.
Yeah, I'd like to add on that. I think that Lady Planeswalker Society is a great place to start. And I'm sorry that your experience in the judge community was not more inclusive, because a lot of people do say that it is a tight-knit community, and sometimes it can be really hard to break into a tight-knit community, regardless of if it's judges, players, or, you know, kids on the playground, whatever it is. Like, it just can be difficult. And I feel like in your email, it kind of sounded like you aren't being invited to things or don't feel like you're being included. And maybe a good way to remedy that is to be the one who does invites. If you see people, you know, playing EDH or something, be like, hey, do you guys want to go play EDH at Perkins or, you know, whatever diners you have in Canada? I don't even know if they have Perkins, but, you know, something like that. Maybe being the one to kind of instigate, as scary as it may be, might be a better solution, because a lot of people don't even think about including new players. I mean, you see somebody sitting alone at F&M, and it's easy to just be in your group and, you know, not really aware of who's there and who's having fun or who's not, unless you're really being cognizant about it. So I think that you have to kind of take a first step and extend yourself to the people around you, because it can be really challenging for people to be like, hey, come join us. Like, that's a really tough thing for a group of friends to say. But if you just, you know, sit with them and be like, hey, do you want to play a game? That can be a really good starting point for a basis. And then I don't want to say, like, run and hide on the internet or anything, but I do think that there are really good spaces like Twitter, where you can cultivate a following and express yourself and have friends that you may not have otherwise had. I know that's what Twitter has kind of been for me. I've gotten to meet a lot of nice people. I have gotten to expand my horizons and hopefully other people's horizons. But I think creating a safe space, even if it's online with people you don't know, I mean, you might see them at an event somewhere, you might be able to meet up sometime, but having a support system, regardless of if it's virtual or, you know, somebody down the street, I think can be really important. And so maybe trying to get more onto the Facebook groups or like in your local community or Twitter or something. I think those kind of spaces are also good ways to cultivate new friendships that might be out there waiting that you just haven't discovered yet.
I had to think about this for a bit just to make sure exactly what I wanted to say. But it does really hurt me that Darcy does not feel that he's accepted in the Magic community. That really, really hurts to hear. As a person that grew up with low self-esteem and not very many friends, I can relate to feeling like other people don't understand you, even though you're putting the best you forward. Maybe other people don't pick up on that, even though they say, oh, you're a really nice person, but they don't ask you to hang out. And even with, you know, the judges, I think with that situation, maybe talk to your regional coordinator, talk to someone that you feel comfortable with talking to in the judge community to be like, you know, I really do want to be closer with the other people that I judge with and see if that's something that you could do. And even as Katie said, put yourself out there, be the person that says, let's go do this thing. Is anyone interested in it? Because I understand the feeling of wanting people to just say, hey, you, we want you to come and do this thing with us. And that feeling of, oh, they want me. This is really cool. I'm being invited to go do this thing. And unfortunately, sometimes we end up in a position where we have to do the asking and hope for a really nice response, not a shitty one. And I think that maybe there are people that just don't understand how important this is to you to want to be closer with other people, to be included in events. And I don't think it's because they're bad people. They may just not be as perceptive as you clearly are. You seem like a person that is very empathetic to others. So you're able to pointedly point out your feelings and possibly understand how someone else would feel if they were feeling like you do. And maybe the people you're dealing with just aren't quite as empathetic as you are. I don't know what to say so much as being misgendered, because my experience with that is very different than yours. But it is very unfortunate that it happens. And unfortunately, there really is no easy way, at least in my experience, to handle that situation, because there is that feeling of being like, no, that's not who I am, and why does this keep happening? So I don't really have a good answer for that. I just wish you the best of luck, and I hope that it becomes less of a problem as time goes on. And I really do want you to find a good supportive place and good supportive people, because it sounds like you're someone that needs that. I know that I was, and I'm fortunate that over the years I've been able to attain that, and some of it I've had to self-cultivate. So I understand it can be a struggle. So just know that putting yourself out there is the first step, and it's one of the bravest things that you can do. So I really hope that things do get better for you. We're supportive of you, and you will find people that will be as well. Mm-hmm.
So I just want to preface this by saying that I've actually met you, Darcy. I went to Gen Con a couple of years ago, and you were judging, and I thought you were fantastic. And I admit that I had misgendered you. I had seen you were wearing the Gen Con badge, and there was a little rainbow thing attached to the bottom that said gamer, G-A-Y-M-E-R. And I just thought you were a very sassy lesbian, and I really enjoyed a sassy female judge, and I really enjoyed, you know, the way that you handled all of the events that I played in. And so when I had talked about you to other people and other judges, I had said, you know, she's really great. I hope I see her again. And I just wanted to apologize to you, Darcy, because I didn't know that you identified as a cis male. You are a cis male, and I apologize. Apologize for that, and going forward, I just want to say that will absolutely not happen again. But I do want to stress the fact that I've met you. I think you're outstanding, and so I did recognize your name when you sent us the email. I think, you know, the others brought up some really, really good points. You know, I think that talking to the regional coordinator, you know, I think the overall theme of the advice that we have is to really put yourself out there. You know, make it clear that, you know, I'm always here for roommates if people need somebody to sleep with or sleep, you know, get a room with when we go to events. I would love to go out with you guys if you want to get something to eat afterwards. I'm here if anybody is looking for mentoring or something like that. You know, really making yourself available, you know, for that, and making it clear that you're here for that reason. I also like Katie's idea of sort of taking the initiative, and instead of being invited to dinner, being the one to sort of create the invite and saying, you know, or even offering another possibility where if these people are going to restaurant A, maybe not everybody wants to go to restaurant A and say, okay, if you guys are going for Japanese, let's go for Chinese. I'm going to go to restaurant B. Who's with me? And sort of giving people an alternative. You know, Katie also brought something really great up about kind of recognizing who else might not have anyone to play with. You know, maybe find other outsiders, you know, find other people who maybe also aren't being included and poach them, kind of scoop them up and form your own table. You know, we like to joke about don't sit with us, you know, or you can't sit with us. You know, if you find that you're not being invited to that table, you can certainly make your own table and sort of cultivate your own crew and your own people to sit with. And, you know, if you notice anybody new in the community, be the first one to introduce them before the other people necessarily do, and sort of introduce them to you and what you're all about. And you know, even content creation. You know, Katie also talked about finding people online. You know, one of the biggest ways that I've been able to connect with other trans women is through my work, through podcasting, having other people find you. I don't know of very many cis male gay voices in the magic community. And so I think if you had it in you to maybe write some articles or to maybe stream, and put it out there that that's who you are, you know, maybe you might find an audience and that audience would turn into rooming opportunities or social opportunities when you're at events like it's done for me and the trans girls in my life. And I just want to say that, you know, if we're going to events, you know, the four of us, I'd like to think that we'd all hang out with you or we'd all be, you know, willing to possibly room with you. And so if you happen to go to any events in the US, definitely let us know, because I can certainly speak for Chris and I that we're always looking for roommates. And so if you're up for, if you like Forensic Files and Chinese takeout, we would love to have you stay with us. So definitely keep us posted with whatever you decide to do. It sounds like, you know, cultivating your own community is what you might need to do. But I think also contacting, you know, the judges in your life and really putting yourself out there, you know, just really, you know, slamming that point home that I'm here. I want to be part of this. I'm, you know, please include me. I think that goes a long way too. Mm-hmm. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I streamed my Mono Black Aetherborn deck yesterday.
Ooh.
And that was fun. It was a kind of impromptu, like, midnight stream. But it was a lot of fun getting to play the deck online. I definitely played it less than ideal, as opposed to Paper Magic, just trying to remember, oh yeah, this card does this, and this is a better play. But chat was super awesome, as always, and even gave me some suggestions for the deck. We kind of worked on my mana base a little bit, so I'm looking forward to revamping it and streaming it again. So if anyone would like to watch me stream Standard or Modern, you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Dekriz, and I promise that the deck is sweet. It is a lot of fun, and I've got all these people hype, and I'm pretty stoked about it.
And also, shout out for you had the paper version at the open, and props to having every single swamp matching.
I can only be a good person.
If anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can also find me on Instagram and Snapchat at HalcanSan. And if you missed any of my coverage of GP Vancouver a couple weekends ago, you could check that out on Daily MTG.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I should have something coming up soon. I've just been trying to make sure what I want to write about, because I keep changing my mind every 5 seconds, but I've got something in there. So I hope in the next week or two that I will have it up. And again, my Twitch profile is twitch.tv/Dekriz.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. My stream is twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. I stream every Tuesday and Thursdays when I can. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us at GatheringMagic.com every Friday. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.